Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Welcome back to another episode of Success Is, the podcast where we uncover what success truly means through the stories of entrepreneurs, visionaries, and thought leaders who are out there making it happen. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce someone who brings a refreshing and deeply human approach to business growth, Craig Andrews. Craig is a U.S. Marine turned electrical engineer and mobile phone designer turned marketer and multi-best-selling author. He's driven over $500 million in revenue through his career. In 2009, Craig launched his own company, which became Allies for Me. In August 2021, Craig began 3 months in the hospital and 6 weeks in a coma where he nearly died. During that time, Craig's team ran Allies for Me without him. Now Craig shares lessons from the ledge of death and how they apply to both marketing and life. Craig, holy smokes, that's a lot. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you. Thank you for being a guest today. Can't wait to go through our interview today.
Bill, it's good to see you, and I've really been looking forward to this. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So what does success mean to you?
You know, I think you just touched on it. You know, when I woke up from my coma, it took a couple weeks for my brain to kind of clear. And my wife started telling me about what had been happening. And she told me about how my team ran my business without me. She told me about how freelancers started reaching out to my team and saying, we'll do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital. And just story after story made me realize the lives that I'd impacted that I'd never thought before. And so eventually I will die, and success would be having an even bigger impact on those that are left behind.
Absolutely. Yeah. So how did your ideas of success change, I guess, prior to this and then after? Did you have you had that aha moment? Was there some result of clarity before and after?
You know, I mean, I'm a business guy. I want to make money and, you know, I want to be very successful. But the reality is, you know, when you die, you know, that's not what people are really going to remember you by. And I think it's really important in whatever I do, I wouldn't be making a difference in the lives around me. And I'm serious. It just really, it shocked me. I was surprised when, you know, I started reading comments that, you know, my wife journaled on something called Caring Bridge as a way of updating friends and family. And I went through and started reading the comments, and people that I thought, you know, didn't really care, they were in there commenting. And they were supporting my wife at a time where they thought I was a goner. Except for about a half dozen people in this world, everybody thought I was going to die, wow, including my wife, because that's what happened to everybody before me that went through that protocol. And that's what the doctors had told my wife. And it just really shocked me. I didn't realize the number of lives that I had touched, and still surprises me. But it really gave clarity in terms of, you know what, eventually you will die. And that is the legacy that you want to leave.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So now how do you measure the true impact of your work beyond revenue?
You know, let me go back to doing it wrong. So when I was in corporate America, I was really good at what I did. I had overestimated my own ability. And I just thought, you know, I go out on the road and, you know, wonderful things happen. And when I started my own business, I started realizing the team that made it possible for me to go out on the road. And I felt horrible. I felt absolutely horrible. I wanted to go back and apologize to everybody that I undervalued. And so part of my goal ever since that moment of realizing that, and that was, that probably hit me somewhere around 2010, 2011. Was to kind of make up for that. And one of my goals in business is that I would build a team that would be valued for what they do, and you know, and then ultimately tested that they could run the business without me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we've all kind of gone through that journey of that transition to servant leadership, where you realize, my God, these people are just amazing, and I'm grateful to be working with them and helping support them. Can you talk to us a little bit about what inspired you to start Allies for Me, and how did your journey in marketing begin?
Yeah, so the funny thing, my life has been anything but a straight line. You know, I was a horrible student in high school, had 2.5 GPA, and I realized, and I realized I was just goofing off. I was screwing around in high school. I could have done a lot better, but I realized I needed to make a change. And so I joined the Marine Corps, and I ran across my first great salesman. I went in willing to sign up for 3 years. He got me to sign for 6, and he was just awesome. He was Force Recon. I mean, he was a Marine. And but I went in the Marine Corps, and that's where I started. A lot of change started happening there. And I started going to community college to get my GPA up. And the only thing I knew was I wanted to create things. You know, I've always had a very creative bent. And I thought, well, who creates things but engineers? And so I could often get a couple engineering degrees and then discover, oh, that's not a field where they reward creativity. Yeah, because what happens when engineers make mistakes, either people die or you spend millions of dollars. And so it's a very, very conservative field. And I put crazy things on people's websites that scare them, but eventually make them a ton of money. And engineering organizations don't like that fear factor. So at one point I decided, you know what, I was designing cell phones in 1990s. I mean, it was a cool job. It was a design job, which few engineers get. And it was in a cool industry. I had a drawer full of cell phones at all times. I had different colored phones for different days. But I wasn't happy. And so I decided, well, let me try marketing semiconductors for mobile phones. And I got into that, and that was fun. It was hard work, worked really, really hard, but it was a blast. And I was getting to do more creative things. But one of the things, you know, for us to deliver that iPhone to you for now like $800, the cost pressure on the suppliers is insane. Mm-hmm. We were on a 20% year-on-year downslope on price. Whatever we were selling this year for $1, next year we had to sell for 80 cents.
Wow.
At the same time, the investors wanted us to have 40 to 50% gross margins. So that meant every year we had to take half the cost out of what we were doing while adding more functionality. And I knew the day would come that they would ask me to fly coach to Asia. And I knew when that day came, it was time to move on.
Yeah.
Because I loved going to Asia, but I was like, screw this coach business. Because it's a hard flight. And when you land, you have a hard job to do. And so I came, and I was like, again, a little bit arrogant. I was like, all right, well, hey, I've done all this and this. Let me go share my wisdom with other businesses. And so I started my own agency. And as I started running into my buddies from the semiconductor world, they're like, Craig, what have you been doing? I said, I've been spending the last 10 years discovering how little I know about marketing. And yeah, oh, it was humbling. Yeah, so not only had I devalued the people that made me, you know, that were essential for me to excel in that world, but I'd become a little too bold thinking, you know, about what I thought I knew.
Did you have that oh shit moment when you stepped off onto your own?
No. I don't know how it is for other entrepreneurs, but I mean, I was all hopped up on the adrenaline, and you know, like, I'm
yeah, the down part. Yeah, the learning and the oh God, might have gotten in too deep here.
that eventually came, and you know, it's kind of like swimming 50 feet out from the pier and then realizing you're in a stiff current.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of too late. You got to deal with it.
Just keep going, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So what does smart risk-taking mean to you? And how do you practice it?
I would say smart risk-taking, you're never going to be able to know all the factors. You're never going to know all the things that are going to lead to it. But I would say that when you venture into something, you know, there's a certain amount of research that you should do. And there's some basic questions you should ask, you know, and like one of the, you know, one of the questions, I had a buddy years ago that decided he'd found some scheme where he was going to get gold out of Africa. You know, there was all this gold that was just waiting to be mined. And I remember asking him, I was like, you know, Michael, there are people who devote their entire lives to finding and refining gold. What did you figure out that they didn't?
Right, right.
And he was convinced he had an answer for that. Turns out he didn't. And he lost a lot of money on that. But I think that's a question. I mean, entrepreneurs, I think, they fundamentally look at the world as broken and they want to fix it. You know, there's something broken, they want to fix it, which is admirable. I mean, it's wonderful. And I think part of that, you know, managing risk is you have to step back in a moment of humility and say, I'm probably not the first person to think of this. What have others tried and failed, and why did they fail?
So do you help companies with this in marketing?
Well, so usually we only work with companies that already have some measure of success in the market. You know, one of the things I've discovered about myself is I'm not good at new product ideas. I wish I was, but I'm not. Where I'm good is once you have something that's proven in the market and you're having trouble growing revenue, that's where we're really good at stepping in. That's just where my skills lie. Because I've come up with ideas. I remember once I was talking to a VC and I said, hey, you know, I have this idea about home theater PCs. I don't know if you remember that. There was an era.
Yeah, I had a home theater PC. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, this is the future. It makes so much sense. PC. Yeah. And I talked to him and he's like, Craig, that's a dog. That's not going anywhere.
Yeah. Well, who knew streaming would come out and become a thing, right? The whole idea of having your stuff made sense, right? Having all your content on a device, you could access all of it. You basically had your own Netflix on a computer, on a device. And you had your iTunes, your music, all of it. I mean, it was a great idea, but then streaming came along and made it so easy to have it on every device, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And now they finally figured out how to synchronize the stream over Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not good. I mean, if I'd had a big chunk of money, I would have invested in home theater PC and then would have lost it all. So I'm not good at launching new products. But when there's a clearly defined market, and we understand that, especially if it's a crowded market, you know, another term is commoditized. A lot of people think commoditized means cheap, and it doesn't necessarily mean cheap. It just means crowded. If somebody's in a commoditized market, you know, so we have a known need, where I do best is going in and helping them stand out and look different than the thousands of other people that do what looks from a distance identical.
Yeah. Can you give me some examples of type of things that you look for or things that you help out with?
Well, we have a saying that when you can't differentiate on what you do, the differentiation is you. And so let me give a couple examples. Financial advisors. So I won't say his name on your podcast. I don't want you to get sued. But there's a big financial advisor in the United States that spends over $100 million in advertising and goes around and is like, we're different. I'm like, no, you're not. No, you're not.
They're just saying.
There's 450,000 of you guys in the U.S., and you all do basically the same thing using basically the same tools. Now you're not different. Then he comes out and he's like, well, we're a fiduciary. I'm like, that's jargon. Nobody knows what it means. And the SEC chairman who does know what it means, he says it's a meaningless term. Mm-hmm. Because what a fiduciary, to meet the fiduciary definition according to the SEC rules, there's loopholes you can drive a bus through. And so that's an example where it's a very crowded market, 450,000 financial advisors in the US, all making the same claim. And so we look at amplifying the individual. So we had a client, RIA firm, and their chief investment officer was a computer science major. He wasn't a financial guy in training, you know, by his formal education. He was a computer science guy. When you looked at him, he kind of looked like a computer science guy. He dressed like a computer science guy. He got his hair cut where computer science guys get their hair cut. He went to the same gym where the computer science guys didn't work out. And so that was easy. That's what we started focusing on because he was adorable. And yeah. And then one day we're sitting around and the team was talking and they start telling me the story. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, you guys have no idea what you just did.
Oh, yeah. You opened Pandora's box here, huh?
So the following week, I go back and I say, hey, can we rewrite your About Us page? And they're like, yeah, sure. Because they've been really happy with our work. And I said, actually, I have a first draft. And I slid it across the table. And they read it. And they're like, Craig, this is really good. We really like it. There's one part that we'd like you to take out. Can you take out the part about John being a gambler? And I said, I could, but that would remove the biggest trust building element from the story. And at that point, they were thoroughly convinced they hired the wrong guy.
Yeah.
So remember I said engineering, they don't like risk. This is right. Like the very definition of risk.
Yeah.
Until you understand how the brain works.
This is a financial company or what is it that this guy does?
He was a financial advisor. He was the one that
you're advisor and you're telling people that he was a former gambler.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And how does this make sense?
So an essential ingredient to build trust. If you need to build trust with your customers, you absolutely must reveal a weakness, vulnerability, or flaw. You will not build trust until you reveal that weakness, vulnerability, or flaw. Our skill is figuring out which one to reveal and how to position it so it builds that trust.
Hmm. See, I always thought the formula for building trust was like something like the number of positive experiences divided by the perceived risk or something to that effect. But you're actually showing people the weakness or the negativity in the individual, or
Well, so let me give an example. So we have a client that does offshore software development, highly commoditized. Thousands upon thousands of Indians say, hey, you know, we'll do your software cheap. And so the beginning of their About Us page starts off saying, a foreign bird with a local walk is an Indian phrase for a person who is out of place and has learned to adapt. Some use that phrase to describe me. My skin is dark and my name is a Syriac Malayan name that is common in South India. But I grew up in Dallas. Whether I am walking in India or in Dallas or in Texas, I am out of place. My life is a journey of finding order when everything else is out of place.
Gotcha.
And so that was actually hard for us to get the client to agree to put on the site because he didn't want to be a foreign bird with a local walk.
Yeah. I feel a little bit exposed putting that out there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I asked him, I said, do you want to make money? He's like, yeah. It's like, this will make you money.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So well, that's interesting.
Well, and let me give the example. I mean, you own a software company. Mm-hmm. We have CEOs of software company going to their contact page, filling out the contact form, saying, hey, I'd like to talk to you about your services. I can guarantee you they didn't find them on a Google search because these guys aren't on the first page of Google. They're not on the second page of Google. They're lucky if they're on the 10th page of Google. So why are these CEOs coming out of nowhere and saying, I want to talk to you about some of our projects?
Because he's got personality. He stands out. He's different.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about in the past with AI, and a lot of the marketing material that I see nowadays is it's like blueprint. It's like the same thing over and over again. And it almost seems like they follow the same formula over and over and over again. And a lot of that individual identity is being lost. Like there's even automation suites out there with marketing where it's automating the whole process and it's the soulless company that you're now dealing with now.
Yeah.
Is that effective for people? Is that working? Or are you seeing more of the individual efforts, the personalization working in marketing efforts?
You know, I think the AI works really good for marketers that are selling AI marketing services.
Yeah.
I think they're killing it.
Yeah, I bet they are. Yeah, that's right. Well, because AI just has the name, right? It was crypto, you know, before that everyone had to have apps. I mean, yeah, you got all that stuff. So for sure.
You know, one of the things that I saw is when ChatGPT first came out, people felt like they finally found their blog writer. You know, everybody knows they should be blogging. They're like, oh, I got this AI that's going to generate, you know, 100 blogs in no time. And the thing that they missed in that, remember the thing I talked about with my buddy who was looking for gold in Africa?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I said, everybody's doing it.
What is it that you figured out that other people hadn't?
Yeah, that's right.
And so the new noise level, and I don't think most people have figured this out. You're trying to rise above the noise. Well, the new noise level is mass quantities of AI written content.
Yeah, it really is. It's high quality content. Whereas someone like me is like looking for spelling mistakes in emails because I know it's a real person, right? Grammar errors and stuff like that. I've actually been typing my emails out to people with like run-on sentences and stuff like that, just so they know it's actually me that typed it.
Yeah.
Because I played around with some of these AI tools for writing emails. I mean, you go in there and it'll have already crafted up drafts for like somebody in response to them. You just hit the send button. And I'm like, man, like if everybody's doing it, like you said, how do you stand out? What's the benefit to you? You know, it's just the new norm. So I'm with you.
And what you were talking about, I think we talked about this before when we were just chatting, you know, years ago, before ChatGPT was even known. I mean, years before that, I'd written some emails and I passed them on to my team, and I have one of my editors like, Craig, you have grammar errors here. You need to fix these grammar errors. And I was like, well, let me pull in another one of my editors. And I pulled her in. I was like, what do you think? And she looked at it and she's like, yeah, they're grammar errors. You shouldn't do that. I was like, okay, two against one. I'll go with the majority here. I thought it worked better. Well, Shauna, who was the second editor, I said, Shauna, go ahead and fix it, yeah, and bring it back. And she came back a day later and she said, Craig, you're right. You're right. She said, I took out all the grammar errors. And when I read those emails, they were cold.
Yeah, because it's not you in it. They can't hear you in it. That's right. Yeah, absolutely. So along that lesson, I mean, there's a lot. I think environment's changing constantly, especially in the business world, especially in marketing. My God, the things that have changed in marketing over the years are incredible. How do you maintain your core values, your core beliefs, while growing a results-driven business?
You know, some of it is, I would say that there are some basic principles that existed before AI, that existed before computers, that, you know, just work all the time. We were talking about Henry Ford, how he introduced the $5 payday because he wanted to make sure that his employees made enough money that they could afford to buy one of the cars they built. And so at that point, the technology doesn't matter. You know, so technology can change and there's always going to be competition. And, you know, the downfall of Ford wasn't brought by technology. It was brought by successors that abandoned the principles of Henry Ford. Mm-hmm. Look at Walmart. Oh, my goodness. I used to love going into Walmarts. And as a matter of fact, I mean, when they were first sprouting up over the country and one would show up in my region, I'm not kidding. I would take people to Walmart. I'm like, you got to see this place. You've never seen anything like it. And I would take them in. We'd go up and I'd ask somebody, I was like, can you tell me where the light bulbs are? And they would say, oh, follow me.
Yeah.
They would drop, they were busy doing something. They would drop what they were doing and they would take you right to where the light bulbs were. I was like, I've never seen anything like this. And Walmart's bigger now. They're, I think, more profitable now, but I think their days are limited. And, you know, one of the things that they abandoned kind of the core principles, and all of a sudden another company called Amazon popped up. Mm-hmm. And Amazon has passed them in online retail and is hot on their heels in all retail. And if you look at what Jeff Bezos did in growing Amazon, it was back to the kind of a lot of the principles of Sam Walton of we're going to remove friction out of the process and we're going to delight our customers. And, you know, and I think Amazon is slowly drifting away from that. You know, you go search for something, you're like, put in a very specific search in Amazon. I want a, I'll give you an example. I was like, I was looking for a set of Beats headphones, earbuds. You put in Beats earbuds. If Amazon was serving their customer, the number one search result would be Beats earbuds. But it's not. It's somebody else that paid to have that position. And then somebody else that paid to have that position. And you're having to go halfway down the page until you find those Beats earbuds.
Yeah. So an example of these companies that have lost their core values. You know, one of my first jobs I had was at Home Depot. I just 9/11 had happened. This was 2001. I had just left the construction industry and I started working at Home Depot. Well, at the time, Home Depot was hiring like ex-tradespeople. Mm-hmm. So me being in construction, they hired me, plumbers, retired plumbers, things like that. They would hire. And you would go in there and if you needed something, you were talking to an expert and they would say, yeah, come over here. You know, this is what you need. Da, 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 you know, and they had all those classes and all that stuff and they connect you with it. And that's, I really think was one of the big differentiators with Home Depot was you were talking to like the people that really helped you become an expert. And then along the way, when Walmart started taking off, they started adopting that model of, hey, we're going to start undercutting and cutting the wages, and we just want to go with whatever the cheapest help we can get is. And it completely changed the culture of Home Depot at the time. And I don't think it was for the better. And for a while, I think they kind of struggled with that identity for a few years before they ended up gaining it back. So, you know, you're never too big to fail, right?
No. And if you're number one, the one thing you can be certain of is there's somebody out there that's hungrier than you.
Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely. Well, Craig, I want to appreciate your time today. And I'd say for our audience listening today, how do they get in touch with you? How do they follow what you have going on?
Yeah, so the best way is to come to my website, which is alliesforme.com. That's A-L-L-I-E-S, the number 4-M-E.com. And we didn't talk about it, but I have a gift for the audience. If you have a high ticket service, there's something called a first-time offer, and they have to be structured just right. And I made a lot of mistakes figuring these things out. So I made a guide to help you avoid some of the mistakes that I've made. And I also have a course, online course, where I'm going to give 23 days access to anybody that signs up. Now, let me clarify. I'm not trying to be a chiseler on the 23 days access. We're experts in human behavior. And the one thing I know for certain is if I say, hey, here's this course, come sign up and you'll have it, they'll never take the course. They'll sign up, but they'll never do it, and their lives won't change. And so what I've found is if we put a limit, and 23 days is plenty of time to go through that course. If we put a limit on that, we see it in the analytics. People come in, they start working the content, their life starts changing. So the way they get that is they go to alliesforme.com/success-is, and they can get that. The other ways to find me, come on LinkedIn, very prevalent on LinkedIn. So those are probably the two best ways.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. And you follow him on LinkedIn and take advantage of that great offer. Craig, thank you so much for joining us today. It was great hearing a little bit about your journey and your background and your history and kind of your philosophy on business and marketing. It's all of our listeners. Thank you for tuning in for another episode of Success Is. If today's conversation sparked something in you, inspired a new way of thinking, or gave you a fresh strategy to implement, we'd love to hear from you. Remember, success isn't a destination. It's a journey of intention, growth, and connection. Until next time, keep showing up, keep growing, and keep redefining what success means to you.